With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome to Cinematic Universe, a podcast that's all about comic book movies, brought to you by FilmDivider.com. I'm Joe Cunningham, and joining me to help make sense of the comics behind the movies are...
Sir Patrick.
And James Hunt.
Now, normally we discuss the latest comic book movie and TV news before launching into our spoiler-filled discussion of one film or TV show, but this week we have got, like, 20, 30 different things to discuss, because this is the Cinematic Universe End of Year Special Awards Show. This is going to be a two-part podcast. You're obviously listening to part one right now, and part two will arrive next week. And we are going to be handing out awards to all of the movies and TV shows that we have covered on the podcast this year. Now, helpfully, we started the podcast right at the start of January, so we have got a full rota of stuff to talk about and hand out awards to. And now what I think I'll do is I'll run you very quickly through at the start everything that is eligible for awards conversation. And then basically, if you think, oh, I didn't listen to that podcast, nah, I've done a clever plug. You're going to go back and listen to some of our old episodes, hopefully. So we've got the Daredevil movie. We've got the Batman 1989 movie. Iron Man, X-Men Origins Wolverine, Watchmen, Superman, Avengers Age of Ultron, Ghost Rider, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Chronicle, Scott Pilgrim vs. the World, Spider-Man, Ant-Man, Fantastic Four, Batman Begins, Howard the Duck, The Incredible Hulk, Ghost in the Shell, X-Men First Class, Blade, Hellboy, Kick-Ass, Iron Man 2, and then on the TV side, Agent Carter, Daredevil, and Jessica Jones. And we've even got Arkham Asylum, the game, in there as well. Although, I'm not sure he's been nominated for any awards. It's a bit difficult to get a game in the same categories. So we'll give it Game of the Year right at the start. Batman Arkham Asylum wins Game of the Year.
I dispute that.
So this is going to be pretty freeform. What we've done between us is we have all suggested nominees for, I think we've got like 18 categories or something. It's very exciting and unruly. And we have kind of figured out five nominees for each category. And what we're going to do during the course of the show, we're each going to pick one nominee from that category to kind of argue the case for. And once we finish arguing, we're going to do a final vote and we're going to decide on a winner. So I think we'll do what the Oscars tend to do, which is to start off with a pretty big award. Like, not the big one, but, you know, a pretty big one straight from the outset. And they normally go for Best Supporting Actor or Actress. So we'll start with our Best Supporting Actor category. And the nominees are Michael Peña for Ant-Man, J.K. Simmons for Spider-Man, Vincent D'Onofrio for Daredevil, Nicolas Cage for Kick-Ass, and Sam Rockwell for Iron Man 2. So, five pretty exciting names there. Some exciting supporting performances. I was lobbying hard to try and get Colin Farrell from the Daredevil movie in there. He didn't make it. Michael B. Jordan from Chronicle. I was trying very hard to get some Chronicle nominations in here today, and it fell on deaf ears with my fellow podcasters. Should have got Reese back in. He loves Chronicle. He hated it, didn't he? Yeah. Hated Chronicle.
He suggested it and he hated it.
Seb James, anyone that you were particularly passionate enough about that didn't make this list?
I was gonna just do Kieran Culkin.
Yeah, Kieran Culkin from Scott Pilgrim.
Yeah.
Very strong, but didn't quite make the cut. I was surprised we didn't get any Batman Begins actors in here, because obviously you've got, you know, like...
Did I put Michael Caine in? I meant to put Michael Caine
You did, but he didn't make the final five.
Yeah, so, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I think this was a pretty strong category, because I think you've got, as well... I mean, Kick-Ass, I think Nick Cage and Mark Strong. I think if you would count... Would you count Jack Nicholson in Batman as a lead or a supporting? I mean, his name is the... He's the highest billed actor.
Yeah, and as we went into at the time, the entire origin story is basically his.
Yeah, so maybe he doesn't count. Another one from Scott Pilgrim would probably be Brandon Routh and Chris Evans.
I've got to say, people from Scott Pilgrim is going to be a running theme in this episode. At least if I've got anything to do with it.
The supporting actor categories particularly, because there's so bloody many of them, and they're all so good.
They're all excellent.
And also, when we get to it, I think we'll note that... supporting actress is quite a difficult category because these films don't tend to be very good with secondary female characters in any way, shape or form.
Yeah, that's
true. So Scott Pilgrim kind of probably gets most of those by default. Spoilers. But no, that's the thing. But supporting actor is a really strong category. I think it's quite indicative of what comic book films tend to be like, which is that you often do get, as long as they're male, some pretty memorable and often good comic relief supporting characters. Played by really good character actors.
Like Eldon Henson from Daredevil's TV series.
Yeah, which was one of James's suggestions to the award. Well, James...
is that Foggy?
Yes.
That is Foggy.
Oh, no.
A bit of a controversial shout. He wasn't popular with everyone. Seb, do you want to start off by arguing the case for one of these three actors? Someone you're particularly passionate about winning?
Well, getting to pick first means I get to pick the obvious winner, which is J.K. Simmons. I mean, like, all the nominees in this category would be fully deserving to win at any other time other than being up against J.K. Simmons as J. Jonah James. I've also just realised that at some point next year we'll probably do Spider-Man 2, so he's going to win again. But we talked about it at length on the Spider-Man podcast that it is up there as one of the most absolutely perfect pieces of casting in any of these movies, or indeed in movies in general. It's a perfectly judged performance. You can't ever see anybody else as playing the character. You know, every single moment that he's on screen is an absolute delight. It is, you know, it's J.K. Simmons.
Yeah, like, I know technically I'm supposed to be arguing for one of the others, but I fully agree with that. In that you can imagine anyone else being replaced in their roles, but not him. Like, it's pretty telling that Mark Webb decided just not to use J. Jonah Jameson at all in his films because he couldn't do better.
Hey, I mean, we sort of said this at the time, but I don't see any objection to just bringing him back, even in a different continuity.
No, exactly.
It was an error of judgment not to have Jonah in those films.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, so interestingly, the only person who originally made all three of our lists, and I think that's probably because J.K. Simmons was forgotten to begin with, but Michael Peña, who starred in Ant-Man, was a slam dunk choice for all of us. And that's interesting, because it's a new film, but I rewatched Ant-Man last night because I got the Marvel Phase 2 box set for Christmas. And he is great. He's so much fun. He steals almost every scene he appears in that movie. So I just thought we'd mention him, seeing as though James decided to double down on J.K. Simmons.
Yeah, I thought we'd get a nice, you know, passionate speech in favour of Michael Peña from James.
But my choice, and actually, as much as I love J.K. Simmons, and my argument for this would be, I do think that J.K. Simmons actually gets some of his best Jonah moments in Spider-Man 2. I really want to bang the drum for Vincent D'Onofrio, because that was a performance this year that was so good in a TV show that was... called Daredevil, and about Daredevil, where everyone pretty much agreed that Charlie Cox had got Matt Murdock just right, and that we were all drawn to this hero, we all liked him. that people were still saying, God, this show should be about him. Like, Vincent D'Onofrio is so much more interesting as Kingpin. And I found myself ridiculously drawn to that character as that show went on. And it was just such a strange and specific performance. And I think, obviously, J.K. Simmons absolutely nails who J. Jonah Jameson is. But D'Onofrio brought something really specific to that role, in the way that I think Nick Cage does to Big Daddy as well, one of our other nominees. So, yeah, I would be leaning in the D'Onofrio direction, but I kind of understand the J.K. Simmons love.
I mean, to an extent, I can see that. It's just, like, when I look at Vincent D'Onofrio's Kingpin, I think that's a Kingpin, but it's not the Kingpin. Like, you can imagine someone else taking on the Kingpin role and doing something different with it. And so, in terms of definitive performances, I don't think you're ever going to beat J.K. Simmons.
It's weird to kind of talk myself out of what my choice was, but I mean, J.K. Simmons is undoubtedly the best, but if we're going to consider the bigger picture and the fact that, like I say, you know, he's going to have two further opportunities to win this, and like, will next year's films throw up as strong a selection as this? It's like, should it maybe be Michael Peña, or should it maybe be, I mean, D'Onofrio maybe, or even Nicolas Cage? I mean, again, you know, we banged on about it on a very recent podcast, but Nick Cage in Kick-Ass is just, for given the relative amount of screen time that he has, although it's probably not that much less than, or maybe even it's more than Simmons has in Spider-Man, but, you know, that's a real standout performance in a... Was he one of the five? Sorry, I missed what the...
Yes, he was, yeah.
Yeah, he was. Yeah.
And so the only person that we haven't really heaped praise on is Sam Rockwell. But we did that like a week ago, guys. You get we love Sam Rockwell.
Sam Rockwell deserves a lot of credit for struggling against a badly underwritten part that suddenly disappears from a film.
I nominated him simply for dancing around the stage, personally. Well, so I think we need to vote. So I'll leave Seb to last, because I think it sounds like he is going to be the deciding vote here. So, James, who are you going for?
It's got to be J.K. Simmons, yeah.
Okay, I am going Vincent D'Onofrio.
Well, if it's of those two, just to avoid it being a three-way tie, I'm going to have to say J.K. Simmons.
Okay, so J.K. Simmons is our inaugural winner of Best Supporting Actor. That's very exciting. We got our first award winner. We'll move on now to, I think, something very specific to this year, and this is the Best New Film Award. So we've reviewed on the podcast three films that were released in 2015. Now, hopefully this category is going to be a lot more competitive in 2016, because there's going to be like six or seven movies, and you'd have to think that at least a couple of those will be good.
Maybe one of them.
Because this year we had a three-way fight between Fantastic Four, Avengers Age of Ultron, and Ant-Man. And this was actually a unanimous decision in the voting, because we couldn't really have like nominees for this category. So guys, should we just spend 5 or 10 minutes talking about why we enjoyed Ant-Man this year more than any of the other new films?
I mean, I don't want to say it won by default, but because I did really enjoy it. I think it's easy to fall into the position of, oh, Age of Ultron wasn't very good. There's a lot that's really good about Age of Ultron, and I think it stood up quite well to a rewatch. Age of Ultron's problem is just that it was the next film after Avengers and Guardians of the Galaxy and Winter Soldier and admittedly Thor 2. But, you know, Age of Ultron was coming off the back of a really strong run and didn't quite live up to that. But it's still a pretty great film, all things considered.
I rewatched Age of Ultron recently with the commentary, and Joss Whedon spent a lot of time talking about how it's a film about class. And I was like, that might have been the film you were making. It didn't really come across.
Yeah. But no, I mean, even with the caveat that I do like Age of Ultron, Ant-Man is just...
Hmm.
I mean, it's just a really enjoyable... It's a fun caper.
Yeah, it's like, it's not without its problems. I think in a stronger year, it wouldn't have had such an easy ride, but based on what we've got to work with...
I think almost if Age of Ultron had turned up and been what we expected it to be, and I don't dislike that movie. I think it's solid. It's just it didn't live up to expectation, and it has bigger problems. Whereas Ant-Man turned up as a film that we kind of knew all of its troubled production. I think we spoke about the first Ant-Man trailer on this podcast, and yeah, it wasn't the best. There was lots of jokes about, oh, I'm called Ant-Man. But
which got cut from the film.
Which got cut from the film. And it ended up surpassing all expectations. And Paul Rudd is a really solid lead. You know, he talks about Michael Peña being great already. So, yeah, like I said, I rewatched this last night. The Falcon set piece is wonderful. The Michael Peña comedy explaining the heist bits are wonderful. There's like 5 or 6 laugh out loud moments in the film. And while it does have that big wasp-shaped hole in the middle of it, at least there is that post-credit scene there saying, yeah, it's going to happen. And they've lived up to that. We know they've lived up to that. She's in the title of the next movie.
I think one of the best things that you can say about Ant-Man is that, like, while it has problems, most of the things that I would kind of criticise about it are things that it didn't do than things that it did do. Like, I don't think it did much wrong, if at all. It's just there are things like, I wish the Wasp had actually been in it as the Wasp. I wish it had had a slightly better villain and maybe a bit more of the stuff with Hank Pym in flashback. You know, it's like, it's just all things it could have done more of rather than... Mm. But, you know, I'd rather come out of a film going, oh, it had things that I liked about it and I wanted to see more of them, than it did a load of stuff that I just wish it hadn't
like
done.
Fantastic Four.
We can probably save discussing Fantastic Four because it might be a nominee in one of our other categories. I would say maybe the main thing that Ant-Man didn't do, and this probably is a result of that script being manically rewritten in the months leading up to principal photography, and that's that I'm not sure it's really about anything. And I think this would have been a film we'd have been looking back at from, you know, 2 or 3 years hence and trying to dive into what the themes of the movie and what it was getting across here and there. I'm not sure really any of that stuff is there, other than some kind of vague attempts at, like, family and that kind of thing that doesn't really come together.
I do kind of think the Marvel films are sort of aggressively attempting to not be about anything these days.
Yeah, but I mean, sometimes they are. We were able to pick out thematic threads in Iron Man 2, which is not a well-loved Iron Man film. They are still there. Whereas I think Ant-Man maybe this is the way that Marvel Cinematic Universe is trending, but I don't think so given the Captain America films. But this is a film that's just full of moments. And I think more than any other podcast, our Ant-Man episode devolved into, oh, wasn't that bit good? And didn't you like that bit? And that bit was fun. Oh, and remember Hayley Atwell? And that when he looked like Gordon Gekko, and the tank flying out of the building, and Thomas the Tank, and the little ant being fed under the table, and oh, Cassidy, isn't she great? Or is it Cassie? I can't remember the kid. Yeah. And I think basically Ant-Man has won this award on the strength of those moments.
Which is no bad thing, you know. So a film full of entertaining moments. Like, it's a lot more than you can say for Fantastic Four, for example, even though I haven't seen it. I'm just going by what you guys have said. You know, I'm very thankful for Lois from rescuing me from having to see Fantastic Four this year.
You're not desperate to catch up with that, Seb?
No, strangely not. But yeah, it's just, you know, Ant-Man is a film I would, you know, I was looking forward to it. Even though I knew it wasn't perfect, I was looking forward to it coming out on Blu-ray so I could rewatch it. And I bought it and rewatched it pretty much straight away. And I still had a lot of fun with it the second time round. So, yeah.
Excellent. So Ant-Man wins our Best New Film Award. Like I said, that's probably going to be a more competitive movie, a more competitive category next year. Who knows?
Snyder's got his fingers crossed.
Yes. Who will take down the award this time next year? Will it be Zack Snyder? Will it be Ryan Reynolds? Will it be Channing Tatum and whoever's directing that movie now? Who knows? There's a lot to look forward to in 2016. We'll move on now to a category, which I'm going to be honest with you, listeners, I'm not sure my co-host took as seriously as I took when we were throwing around ideas for nominations. So this is the Best Couple / Relationship Award, because comic book movies, you've got to have a love interest. If you've not got a love interest, you're doing something wrong. So the five nominees in this category are Tony Stark and Pepper Potts in Iron Man, and I guess Iron Man 2. Are we giving it for both of them?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. You know.
Particularly because they're a couple in Iron Man 2 and not in Iron Man 1.
Oh, yeah, but don't you do down that will they, won't they vibe, because otherwise our next nominee would not have made it in, which is Magneto and Professor X in X-Men First Class. We've then got Peter Parker and Mary Jane Watson in Spider-Man. We've got Howard and Bev in Howard the Duck. And we've got the Hulk and Black Widow in Avengers Age of Ultron, which I added in there basically to troll James, because I still think it works.
So you accused us of not taking this seriously, and you put Howard and Bev in there.
Right, name a steamier sex scene from any movie we've covered.
I mean, that's not the criteria, though, is it?
I mean, I've not seen anyone act with the levels of affection that Howard got
for an animatronic duck.
From Bevy, you know? She loved her little ducky, and she just wanted to help him out.
Well, I think we know which way you're voting.
In favour of animal, which way I'm voting yet.
I want to be one around. James, we'll come to you first, because you put one of these forward. You basically, I picked most of these nominees in the category, because Seb said there is only one that was any good, and so that's the one that Seb is going to be talking about. But James, you had another specific suggestion from this list.
Yeah, I thought we should nominate Zack Snyder and his own left hand. But on the other hand, I think that will dominate next year. So,
sorry, by his left hand, do you mean David Goyer?
God. Oh, this podcast devolving into filth. No, James, you wanted to talk about James McAvoy and Michael Fassbender,
sorry, yes,
didn't
yes.
you?
yeah, just in terms of, like, the dynamic between any two characters on screen and the intensity of their relationship with one another. Like, even though I think McAvoy is a fairly bad Professor X, like, those two characters are the only ones who have any kind of functioning interplay besides Tony and Pepper.
You might not think he's a great Professor X, but he is a great Michael Fassbender's...
Yeah, yeah, affair. Exactly. Like, that scene when they're in the hotel. That's from First Class, is it?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I think I know which one you're talking about.
Yeah, where they're in the hotel and, like, demonstrating their powers to... Jennifer Lawrence, maybe? No, to Angel, that's it. Yeah.
Yeah, I went and looked up the deleted scene that Joe told us about that I'd never seen.
Oh, Fassbender in a dress.
Yeah.
I can't unsee it.
Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised if that scene was deleted because they realised, oh, we're leaning too hard on this.
Yeah.
I mean, those two do have the kind of chemistry that I'm not even sure that Robert Downey Jr. and Gwyneth Paltrow have. But, unlike something we've been looking at, like the Civil War trailer, I'm not sure that X-Men First Class...
Yeah, we know who's going to win this next year.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Well, will it be Tony and, will it be Tony and Cap, or will it be Bucky and Cap? Maybe we'll have to do a best love triangle next year. But yeah, I'm not sure X-Men First Class tries to lean explicitly on this kind of,
The thing is, I think it's actually
undercurrent.
It's weird, because it's like, I mean, it's there to an extent in the script, but actually I think it's something that comes out more in the performances than in what's intended.
Yeah, it's down to their chemistry is so good, you can't ignore it. Like, even though it's not really in the script. I mean, and to be fair, that's how Professor X and Magneto should be.
Hmm.
Like, in their early relationship, if not later on.
So really, is what we're saying here is that Patrick Stewart and Ian McKellen had really been dropping the ball for three movies before this. That's what we're saying.
Given how those two are off screen, I mean, it seems like a massive missed opportunity. But
that's very true. Okay, I'm going to argue the case now for one of these others. And while I really do love the Peter Parker Mary Jane relationship, which definitely has the best kiss, if there was a best kiss award, if we were the MTV Movie Awards, Spider-Man would be absolutely cleaning up right now, because that upside down kiss is amazing. But I'm going to make the case for Hulk and Black Widow. And I know this is controversial. I know James is taking his headphones off in disgust. But I really like what Joss Whedon did with that relationship, which is just to go, I know that there is no precedent for this. I know that in some ways it's not going to make any sense for people who have been shipping Black Widow and Hawkeye or Black Widow and Cap. But he kind of recognised that, at least as a sequel to the Avengers, when we saw those two briefly on the screen together in the first movie, there was chemistry and there was a reason thematically why those two characters would be drawn together. And you've got two actors in Scarlett Johansson and Mark Ruffalo who really, really pulled that relationship off. And I didn't see it coming. I wasn't expecting it. But I just thought when it actually happens on screen, I really believed in it, and I thought that it added some solid emotional beats to Avengers: Age of Ultron. And that's the character interplay is where an Avengers film should really tick.
Like, in fairness, even though there's no precedent for it, and like the purist in me thinks it's a terrible idea, like I can see where Whedon was coming from and why it works. And in fact, having looked at the deleted scenes on the DVD has an extended version of the farmhouse scene that I think should probably have made it in, because it's much better than the kind of wishy-washy ending to that relationship we get in the movie.
Right.
Like, do you know what I'm talking about? Have you seen it?
Am I right in thinking that he explicitly says that they can't be together?
Yeah, because early in the film, she says something like, "I'll never say never." And then in that scene, at the end of it, he says, like, she says to him, "Oh, you know, we can run away and just be monsters together away from the rest of the world." And he says, like, "Never." And it's really amazing and intense. And if they'd left that in, I'd have been much happier. But then they took it out because they thought it was too brutal.
And maybe that would have cleared up some of the confusion around that scene. Mm-hmm.
Well, he said he wanted the Hulk to make the choice in the end, which is a bit strange, but fair enough.
I mean, I just thought that scene was very unfairly criticised from people looking for a reading of that scene that wasn't there to kind of press an agenda onto a film. And I still find it strange, while I don't think it is... just the film as a whole isn't Joss Whedon's finest work and isn't his finest work in terms of representation of women, given that the stuff that we know he's done in the past, I still find it strange that a Joss Whedon film was called out for being overly misogynistic, which I personally don't think it was. Yeah. And I think this relationship works really well.
I mean, I've been part of Buffy's fandom long enough to have seen that happen a lot of times already. So.
Seb, do you want to make the case for the one that we haven't talked about yet?
Yeah, although actually as well, I realised that there's one that I managed to not nominate, which might have made it into the list if I had, which was Clark and Lois in Superman.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, to be fair, is probably something that becomes more relevant in the second film, so we'll probably get to it next year, but it is worth just touching on the strength of chemistry in the interview scene in the first Superman film.
Seb, if you'd have nominated it, it would have made the list, because it was one of my nominees, so... Sorry.
I just completely forgot that. Which, you know, given that it involves a character called Lois, I probably should. But no, I mean, I think the thing with Tony and Pepper, well, there's a couple of things here. Like, I mean, I'm not someone who would generally get involved in sort of, you know, like actually having an investment in the relationships in these films. But I feel like I have done since the first Iron Man film. it was like, you know, I spent that first film really enjoying the kind of growing relationship between them and wanting them to get together. And I think in a lot of films, a lot of this type of film, you know, the sort of token love interest stuff can be a distraction from, you know, the superhero stuff that we want to get to. And in the Iron Man films, sometimes I feel like the superhero stuff is a distraction from the love story that I want to watch. And, you know, by the, I mean, you know, it's in a film we haven't covered yet, but by the time you get to them in Avengers, and even though she's not in it much, just the relaxed, enjoyable nature of their interplay and chemistry and stuff is just...
The scene when Coulson arrives in the hotel.
Really enjoyable to watch. Sorry?
The scene where Coulson arrives in at the top of the tower.
And I just, I really like that it's a relationship that completely puts them as equals, even though, you know, their working relationship starts off with her technically as his subordinate, or even though, you know, really she's running his life for him. It is a completely equal relationship that's founded on total mutual respect. You know, they barely even get into the issue of physical attraction, even though it's Robert Downey Jr. and Gwyneth Paltrow.
Yeah, that's true.
It's, you know, and probably the best, probably the most romantic moment that they have is at a point, we talked about this scene at length on the first Iron Man podcast, but the scene with her helping him to repair and replace the thing in his chest. And it's this sort of comfortable intimacy, even though they're not a couple at that stage, but they're just so completely relaxed with one another. I just always find anything to do with that coupling really enjoyable to watch on screen. And that's why it feels so strange as well in Iron Man 2, seeing Tony being flirty with Natasha when she first turns up, because it's like, but hang on, it's like, I know Tony's, you know, supposed to have this kind of playboy ladies man reputation, but by this stage, he shouldn't be interested in anyone else, should he?
it is Scarlett Johansson.
Yes.
In all fairness.
Yeah. I think that's probably the best explanation you can give to that. Do you think this probably benefits from as well having, you know, we've now seen both Iron Man and Iron Man 2 on the podcast, so we've been able to see both sides of that relationship, because we only really get half an arc in each of in each of the movies.
Although I think I would still be in favour of it if we'd only done the first film, but it would be coming at it from a slightly different standpoint.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, that's part of the reason why I think it deserves the award, is that it's one that we've we've had two films worth of investment in.
So, Seb, I take it you're strongly in favour of Tony and Pepper.
Yeah.
James, is that something you concur with, or do you want to make the case for McAvoy, Fassbender, you know, really, really just turn on your heel and double down on Mark Ruffalo and Scarlett Johansson?
No, I mean,
Howard and Beth?
As much as I'm, you know, a fan of that interspecies thing, I think I'm going to have to go with Tony and Pepper.
Fair enough. Okay, so that does mean the winner of this award is Tony Stark and Pepper Potts, so the best couple relationship on the first year of Cinematic Universe. And we'll move on now to, I think, something that's going to be maybe one of our most competitive categories, which is for best casting. And now we flirted with the idea of maybe having this for casting for an individual character. You know, so we could have been talking about people like J.K. Simmons again. But we decided that we would go for the movies as a whole, which actually means that Spider-Man doesn't make the list, despite that slam dunk casting. I think there's some choices elsewhere that you just go, okay, maybe didn't. I mean, just Tobey Maguire down. They probably didn't. I mean, they're great Spider-Man films, but I don't think anyone would say Tobey Maguire is the definitive Peter Parker.
But I think he's pretty great, as we said on the podcast.
Yeah, yeah. But
he's not my problem with the casting in that film.
Kirsten Dunst.
Go back and listen to the podcast to hear what my problem is.
I think she's great. I couldn't get her nominated in any other categories, apart from that best couple, and we barely spoke about her.
She's great in Fargo, I'll say that much.
For best casting, we have Scott Pilgrim vs. the World, Kick-Ass, Iron Man, which is a recurring nominee, Batman Begins, and Avengers Age of Ultron. So this is interesting. We've had categories kind of dominated by Marvel movies so far. And if you're a Marvel versus DC head, that's probably by virtue of there just been so many more Marvel movies than there are DC. It's a struggle we find constantly on this podcast, trying to find DC stuff to talk about with any regularity. But I'm sure that'll get easier in the next couple of years. But we do have Batman Begins making its way in here, and then Scott Pilgrim and Kick-Ass, which are neither Marvel nor DC. So, guys, do you two want to talk about Age of Ultron to begin with? Because this isn't something that I even considered, because I feel like all the best casting of that movie had already happened on previous movies. So I guess, are you talking James Spader, Elizabeth Olsen, Aaron Johnson?
Well, no, I mean, it still has the Avengers cast in it, so, you know, on a technicality, if nothing else, it's got a really strong lead cast.
Points for not recasting that main cast for your Avengers sequel.
Yeah, exactly. But you can't disqualify it based on the fact that it was a pre-existing cast.
I can. I'm disqualifying it, personally.
Well, but I also think the additional cast members, you know, are all pretty strong additions. Aaron Johnson, really enjoyable as Quicksilver. Elizabeth Olsen didn't get to do loads, but you really liked Elizabeth Olsen, so
yes,
you know,
I did. Points there. She was great.
I can't find anything to fault in James Spader as Ultron. Thought he was tremendous fun.
Andy Serkis, great, really great.
Yeah, I mean, as Andy Serkis.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
His performances go, I wouldn't put it up there with his most significant.
And does it get points for actually giving Paul Bettany physical form?
Yeah.
Why not?
These films don't generally get a lot wrong when it comes to casting, and I think this was just another example of that. And I've forgotten her name. Hawkeye's wife.
Oh, Linda Cardellini.
Yep, yeah. Adding in Linda Cardellini.
Yep, solid. Julie Delpy in the background of a scene, that was fun. So, Avengers Age of Ultron made our list, but I don't think it's going to win. Guys, I want to make the case for Batman Begins, which I think has kind of been like on the fringe of a lot of our categories. In That might be why it's on the fringe. This kind of has to be a degree of consensus, and James is not the Batman Begins fan that Seb and I are.
I've got the torpedoes out for this one.
How did we not have Gary Oldman for Best Supporting Actor? I've only just realised.
Well, so there
you can
we go.
See, we were putting these together quite fast, mate.
So we've got Gary Oldman in this movie as a pretty perfect Commissioner Gordon. We've got Michael Caine as, I think, still my favourite screen Alfred.
Mm-hmm.
And then Christian Bale, who doesn't, I don't think we would, like, spoiler alert, when we get to some of our other categories that are concerned with the lead actor, he's not someone who, like, really steals the show, but I think he's solid as both Bruce Wayne and as Batman, and really never distracts in that kind of sense. And, you know, just people like Morgan Freeman popping up, and you even Rutger Hauer as the head of the company, and
Katie Liam Holmes.
Neeson, and, well, I think Katie Holmes is maybe the weak spot here.
I think that's the thing. I think Batman Begins has got such a strong supporting cast, but it's the two leads. And, like, Bale is okay as Batman, but it's not the weakest of his three, because I think in Dark Knight Rises he just fades into the background. But yeah, I struggle to look at Bale as Batman, even though he does a lot of good work as Bruce Wayne in this. I struggle to look at him and think there's a definitive Batman. Mm. And yeah, Katie Holmes is just a massive weak spot in this film, unfortunately.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
for all the good of the supporting cast, I can't really call it the best cast film, because it kind of dropped the ball with the two leads.
Well, so
necessarily dropped the ball with Batman, because I think Batman is a really difficult character. If you look at every live action Batman, none of them are perfect in the way that every live action Superman has been really good in some way.
Mm.
Batman is a difficult one to nail, so I don't think you can blame Batman Begins for not having a perfect lead, but the fact is it doesn't.
Yeah. Well, so does Iron Man, one of our other nominees, well, so that obviously, in terms of the leads, and there we have Gwyneth Paltrow and Robert Downey Jr. I mean, Robert Downey Jr. might be the finest single piece of superhero movie casting, maybe outside of J.K. Simmons.
I would say it's better than J.K. Simmons, just for the external context.
He's become a one-man industry, hasn't he?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly.
He's become like Tony Stark.
And those films would not exist to the level of success that they do if they'd cast anyone other than Robert Downey Jr.
Yeah.
I think it's, you know...
But does
it's,
it...
It's such a significant piece of casting.
But does it lose points for kind of...
Terrence Howard.
Around the fringes. Well, there's Terrence Howard, but then I'm also thinking just kind of in terms of when you've got Batman, you've got the Batman Begins, you can go through that kind of list of characters. And I don't really think once you get beyond Robert Downey Jr. and Gwyneth Paltrow, I think you're struggling to say, oh, hey, that person was great. And even Jeff Bridges, who's a fantastic actor, who I really, really love, I don't watch this film and go, yeah, they really nailed that character. I feel like he could have been absolutely anyone.
I kind of disagree, because I really like Jeff Bridges in that film. I think he's a good foil for Robert Downey Jr. in many ways.
I do like him in it. I don't think he rises above a weak character as well as Sam Rockwell does.
Mm.
That's true. Yeah.
I think you remember more of Sam Rockwell's good bits in Iron Man 2 than you do of Jeff Bridges' good bits in Iron Man. Even though, I mean, like, Jeff Bridges never really puts a foot wrong. It's just that he's not got loads to work with. I think he's at his best in the earlier stuff when he's being smarmy and friendly with Tony. I think when he's shown his colours and become an outright villain, there's just nothing to him. But I think when he's playing the smarmy mentor figure is when he's at his best.
Yeah. In that, I think. So, I think we'll probably come to James on this one, because he missed the actual podcast where we discussed it. James, do you want to talk about the Scott Pilgrim casting and maybe make a case for that as our eventual winner? Because, man, that is a deep, deep cast, and I wouldn't say there is any glaring weakness in terms of those immediately.
Out of everyone in Scott Pilgrim, like, most of them went on to much bigger things, justifiably so. And I don't...
apart from Michael Cera, who kind of peaked around then.
but I don't think you can find a single weak performance in any of them. Hmm. Like, they're all perfect, even down to the bit parts. Like, I can't remember who plays Como, but it's like they took him off the page and found exactly the right person for it.
There's so many of those, aren't there? And then the big, maybe the one that changes the most from the page is Knives. And Ellen Wong is wonderful. And someone we've not really seen much of before. We haven't seen much of since.
Yeah.
But it's completely amazing in that mm-hmm. in that one film. And you look at people like Aubrey Plaza and Anna Kendrick and Kieran Culkin. And
Brie Larson, Alison Pill, just all of them.
Yeah.
Random Ralph, yeah. Chris Evans, as mentioned before.
God, yeah, and you don't even think about the evil exes. Mae Whitman.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Jason Schwartzman. It takes that long to get to Jason Schwartzman.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then you know, Jason Schwartzman turns up and is just perfect. I would argue the only, and I think I did talk about this on the original pod, but I'm not 100% on Mary Elizabeth Winstead as Ramona. I think there are ways in which she gets the character right, but I think there are other ways, and maybe it's more about how the character is presented in the film.
I think it's more maybe on a script level how that character is written, or maybe how that film took place in the edit, and as we talked about, the ending kind of them being unsure on how it should end.
Yeah.
But I think Mary Elizabeth Winstead is very, very good as Ramona. That maybe just sometimes the character doesn't work quite as well as she did on the page.
Well, I always thought in the comic she's quite hard to get a grip on as well. Like, that's sort of the point, is that she's, you know, she's not very clearly defined. She's, like, got, you know, she contains multitudes. And that makes her hard to cast in a way that these sort of one joke bit parts aren't. It's hard, like, I think a lot of her performance influenced how I read her in the comics now as well. So on that basis, you know, I think it's a good, good piece of casting, because I just find it hard to see anyone else as her.
And we should hit on the only movie in this category that we haven't discussed yet, which is Kick-Ass. Which I think does pretty solid, strong work all the way across the board. And obviously Chloe Moretz was just superb casting. And I think we talked about this when we did it.
To Scott Pilgrim, in terms of even the, you know, the little bit parts throughout. Yeah. I mean, none of them are, with the possible exception of Nick Cage, none of them are as strikingly good as the cast of Scott Pilgrim. But yeah, it's a film that takes the care to nail most of the little roles. I'm not hugely convinced by Lindsay Fonseca, to be honest, but again, that part of the problem is the writing of that character.
I think Lindsay Fonseca would have been fantastic as the Katie of the page, and not so much as the Katie that we end up getting on the screen.
This
is one that, I mean, fair play to Matthew Vaughn for casting up an Italian mafia with mostly East London actors. that's pretty great. Yeah, this.
I'm never going to complain about Dexter Fletcher and Jason Fleming, and I love Mark Strong in that as well.
And even, you know, we mentioned on the podcast, you've got Clark Gregg and Evan Peters as his friends, who are pretty great, and obviously they both went on to bigger things. And yeah, this is one that I think in another year would have a good shot at winning, but for me, I can't look past Scott Pilgrim here. This is potentially one of our best categories. Like, I think Batman Begins is incredible in terms of who it put in those roles, but I can't see past Scott Pilgrim. I think it just gets everything spot on, and I have problems with that movie, but I never had any problem going, that's a character I don't believe, or that's a character that I don't buy as that character from the page. I just think it works top to bottom.
Yeah, agreed.
So are we giving the award to Scott Pilgrim?
I am.
I think we're unanimous on that one.
Excellent. I was thinking that was going to be a very competitive category. I mean, basically, Scott Pilgrim trounced Iron Man, which cast Robert Downey Jr. as Tony Stark. So that's that's pretty telling. Okay, we'll move back to one of our acting categories now. We've done Best Supporting Actor already. And we're gonna hit the category which is probably the one that was the most diverse when we were trying to come up with nominees, and this is Best Supporting Actress. I think between us, we only had one actress who was a unanimous choice, and then we had 13, 14 other names that we'd all put in our list of five. Okay, so our nominees are Scarlett Johansson, primarily for Iron Man 2, Rosario Dawson for Daredevil, and spoiler alert, a brief appearance in Jessica Jones. Scott Pilgrim duo of Brie Larson and Ellen Wong, and from Kick-Ass, Chloe Moretz. And we had lots of potential nominees for this category. And even just looking at Scott Pilgrim alone, which we've just discussed. So eventually we've landed on Brie Larson and Ellen Wong, but Alison Pill nearly made the list, Anna Kendrick nearly made the list. Do you guys have a favourite from those two performances? Can you separate those two? Is the one that you'd prefer to win? Or does Scott Pilgrim just deserve like a cooperative award for all of its supporting female performances, which are pretty roundly excellent?
I think of all the female characters in Scott Pilgrim, I think Brie Larson is the best one at feeling like she's stepped completely off the page. Like, she just is Envy. But I think what Ellen Wong does is to create a character that isn't necessarily the knives off the page, but is actually a lot more interesting and a lot more engaging. Mm. So it's a tough one to call, but I think I'd put Ellen Wong just ahead for that reason.
Yeah, I'd agree.
And she's more significant to the film.
Yeah. And we should talk about this category in general. It was very hard to narrow this down to a list of five. I mean, originally we were just going to do Best Actor and Best Actress, and it seemed weird having some of the lead actors against the supporting actors for awards, so we split them out. But this is a category that was so diverse. There are actually a lot of supporting female performances, and there's arguments for some of these as leads, and there's arguments for some of them as supporting, but there's an awful, awful lot of supporting female performances compared to leads. And that's something we've hit on with superhero movies pretty consistently throughout the year. But it's just, it makes a category like this a difficult one to pin down, just because there's so many people. And it kind of feels...
I think it's more as well that a lot of them, while a lot of them are great, they often don't necessarily get a huge amount to do. So yeah. It's like... I mean, it's weird, because you look at... We actually ended up, as you say, with quite a long list of suggestions, even though most of them came from Scott Pilgrim. But when I was looking through the films, it didn't feel like... Like, I went through film by film, and I was like, oh, there's nobody in that film, there's nobody in that film, there's nobody in that film. We did come up with a reasonably long list, but I think from a quite small selection of material. I think there's a few films that have done it quite well. But in general... You know, I mean, I looked at Watchmen, and it was like, well, Watchmen, you've basically got two female characters, and one of them is a lead and isn't very good, and the other one is Carla Gugino, who I just think is, you know, overacting somewhat, as much as I like her. Batman Begins doesn't really have anybody apart from Katie Holmes.
Mm. Fantastic Four.
Superman, you've got Ms. Teschmacher. Fantastic Four. Yeah. Chronicle, I think... Does it literally have more than one female speaking character?
No, we got into that. It was a... Yeah. It's a thing.
it's great that Scott Pilgrim has a
bunch.
Possibly predominantly female supporting cast, which, you know, is partly because it's about, it's about Ramona's exes, who are mostly male, but you've got... I mean, yeah, again, we didn't even nominate... Mae Whitman in supporting actresses. Yeah. Like there are a lot in Scott Pilgrim. Beyond that, it's, you know,
I would say the
it's things like Rosario Dawson making it in for a few lines of dialogue in Daredevil.
Well, that was the other trend, I think, that in our nominations. I mean, Bridget Regan was talked about for Agent Carter.
Yeah, I would have liked to see Bridget Regan in
there. We talked about
she was excellent.
Rachel Taylor from Jessica Jones, who I thought was just really, really great. And then we had a couple of other people that just missed out on the list. Jennifer Lawrence just missed out on the list for X-Men First Class. But yeah, it's a weird category, isn't it? Should we talk about some of the other people who did make... The five people who did actually make the list? Because despite what we're saying there, with the movies not doing them a huge amount of justice, the other names we have on this list are Rosario Dawson, Chloe Moretz, and Scarlett Johansson. And I'd like to talk about Chloe Moretz being just really, really great in Kick-Ass. Because we kind of talked about this off mic in when we were doing our Kick-Ass recording. Because we recorded a lot of stuff on Kick-Ass. You're lucky you ever heard that podcast. It was so long. But I'm not a huge fan of her in Kick-Ass 2, which I know that you two guys are. We'll presumably get to that later down the line. And I've had more problems with Chloe Moretz as an actor as she's got older, and I find her at some points a really big distraction from movies because I think she tends to act with a capital A. But in Kick-Ass, that really, really works, and she forms a great kind of duo with Nicolas Cage. And I think at points nearly steals that movie out from under everyone else in it. And that's difficult to do for, like, a 11-year-old unknown actress who just throws everything into that film. And I think ends up being really, really great.
I think the only reason I didn't put her at top in this category when I was making my choices is because I considered her the female lead of that movie.
Yeah, I mean, that is arguable.
But otherwise, I completely agree, yeah.
It's difficult sometimes making that distinction. I kind of went with there isn't really a lead actress in that movie, given that she shows up half an hour in.
Yeah, I mean, she's the only female character who has much of an arc, was my feeling about whether she's the lead or not. Because Katie certainly doesn't.
Yeah, that is true. I guess it comes down to whether you think a movie has a lead actor and actress, even if there's only...
Yeah.
You know, like, is a movie with one man in it, does that man become, by default, the lead actor, even if he only has two lines?
Yeah, I think by default, if your film has actresses, it's got to have a lead actress at some point. But that's a different debate.
Who wants to make the case for Scarlett Johansson, who was actually, on our first ballot of voting, the only unanimous choice? That may be recency bias, given that we just watched Iron Man 2.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really know what to say beyond what we said on the Iron Man 2 podcast, really. But, you know, I guess at the time, you know, people were critical of, this film is too much about Black Widow. So it's probably then when you look back at how little of the running time is really about her, it's probably testament to how much she stands out in that film. Very, very good at posing in corridors.
And we haven't mentioned Rosario Dawson, and I think this is one of those that I think she's nominated because she really is great, but, you know, she kind of disappears from Daredevil and you're left wanting to see more from her. And maybe next year, when we do see more from her in Luke Cage, that we'll be able to revisit this.
I mean, we talked about her on the Jessica Jones podcast. Like how,
yeah, she just turns up
and completely owns the entire episode.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sticking needles in people's eyes. I can't give her an award for doing that twice. She'd make me physically ill. Needles in eyes? If that happens in Luke Cage, I'm out on the Netflix Marvel Cinematic Universe.
It's a motif.
Can't take anymore.
Yeah.
Guys, Who do you have someone that's standing out here? Because I now do, and I'm surprised by who that person is.
I mean, if Chloe Moretz is in the supporting category, then it's got to be her for me.
Yeah, I'd agree.
Oh, well, I was leaning in the Ellen Wong direction, but given that I was banging the drum for Chloe Moretz in advance, I am happy to do that. So Chloe Moretz wins Best Supporting Actress for her role in Kick-Ass. We'll move on now to a couple of, the first of a couple of awards that you probably won't see on any normal podcast or normal awards show, because we are having a Best Hero and Best Villain category. And I think let's start off with the heroes, because they're a bit more boring, aren't they? You know, villains are more interesting. We can have a much deeper discussion on those. So Best Hero... this is basically anyone who was a heroic lead in their movie or TV show this year. We have Iron Man, again, showing up in the nominations. Spider-Man, Tobey Maguire's Peter Parker. We have Christopher Reeve's Superman. We have Hayley Atwell's Peggy Carter. And we have... Now, we didn't discuss this, but I'm assuming this is Charlie Cox's Daredevil and not Ben Affleck's.
Yeah.
Is that, well, is that a fair assumption?
Well, I just thought it was best hero generally. So because we had had two Daredevils, I was just going Daredevil in general.
Okay, that's fair. And so I guess we've had kind of three Iron Man appearances this year. So that's probably why he did... He eased into the voting. Does anyone strongly want to make the case for any of these five to begin with? Is there anyone that stands out for you
doing,
as someone
are we
that you
doing
think
it as best character? As in
well, best character, best, yeah. Well, let's debate it. What do you think should be our parameters
for
this?
If best the
hero?
Parameter is like best character on a conceptual level, then anyone saying anything other than Spider-Man is out of their fucking mind. Because
no.
With all the bias of, you know, what I'm interested in, like, Spider-Man is a perfect superhero character. He's the template for virtually every other one that followed, so...
Yeah, no, I think it has to be best hero within the context of the actual thing that we watched this year.
Yeah.
So it has to be specifically Tobey Maguire's Spider-Man. And it has to be Robert Downey Jr.'s Iron Man. And it has to be... I think if we're going for Charlie Cox and Ben Affleck's Daredevil, we might be doing like a plus minus thing there. And similarly, you know, like we know that these characters appear in other movies outside, but you know, we've seen Peggy Carter and other things, and we've seen Tobey Maguire's Spider-Man in two sequels, but it just has to be in context of what we've seen so far.
In that case, I think I'm probably going to go with Charlie Cox as Daredevil, just because I think he nails the character. Like, really, pretty much perfectly. And unlike Tony Stark, he's actually got some proper hardships in his life.
But is it a problem that I didn't want him to take down the villain?
Well, yeah, because that means you're evil.
And is it a problem that when he puts the costume off on, it's naff?
That is
and
more
when
of
he
a
is
problem.
The fully real, but, when he is the fully realised Daredevil, he just kind of beats up a fat guy in an alleyway.
Yeah,
that's
but
not fair,
he's,
is it?
He's blind, so check your privilege.
I think if you're calling a category best hero, you have to look at what the heroes actually do and what they achieve in their respective films.
Yeah.
And you know, all Daredevil really does is to topple the empire of a man who was actually quite successfully regenerating parts of New York.
Yeah.
And the other Daredevil, all he does is win a fight and get his girlfriend.
Fisk is a victim in Netflix's Daredevil, as far as I'm concerned.
You know, Spider-Man, I mean, yeah, in everything that James has said about, in general, Spider-Man as a heroic character is entirely true. But again, this Spider-Man, other than, you know, like, stopping some muggings and just generally stopping crime in New York, which is great, obviously, but the main thing that he does in the film is successfully defend himself from an attack by his mortal enemy.
Superman flies the wrong way around the world.
Well, this is what I'll get to, because Superman stops the destruction of the entire west coast of the USA.
Well, only and after Iron he's Man... watched it happen once.
Well, yeah, but he still stops it happening the second time. So I think you've got to give it to Superman, because he actually performs the biggest and most successful heroic act. Tony Stark, all he does is, again, successfully fend off a couple of bits of corporate subterfuge against him. Like, you know, if Tony Stark isn't there as Iron Man to stop things happening in Iron Man, then all that happens is other people get Iron Man costumes.
Right, I'm pretty sure I'm about to successfully make the case for the winner of this category. Peggy Carter defeats sexism, Seb.
Does she? That's not what I saw.
she does in the eyes of her viewers and her fans. Peggy Carter is, I would say, Agent Carter has a lot of problems. It takes a great supporting character from a movie, fleshes her out, and I would say she is the single area of that show that does not have any flaws. Hayley Atwell is superb as Peggy, and Peggy is pretty badass, and she's a hero with vulnerabilities and flaws, and is kind of fighting her fight on two different fronts.
The reason why, I'd argue for Peggy to win is that she's the best one as a creation of the movies. And I mean, okay, Iron Man runs close because a lot of what makes this version of Iron Man great is the movie version. But all of Iron Man, Spider-Man, Superman and Daredevil pre-exist from comics. And so does Peggy Carter, but I'll come to that in a second. You know, a lot of what makes them great is already there in the comics. You know, Charlie Cox's Daredevil, part of the reason why he's good is that he's a good version of a Daredevil that we already know. Christopher Reeve is a perfect screen portrayal of a character who's existed for seven decades. Spider-Man is the best superhero in comic books, done very well in the first Spider-Man film. Peggy Carter is a pretty nothingy character from comics who the movies and that TV show turned into a great hero. And I think for that reason, she stands as the best hero from comic book movies and TV that we've covered this year, because, you know, it is entirely because of Hayley Atwell and the writers of Agent Carter that she's now such a great character.
It sounds like you're not on board with that, though, James.
You could hear my disapproval. I think that's fair, but I just think the joy of any adaptation is seeing the characters you love appear on screen fully realised. And like, while I've got a lot of affection for Peggy in specifically the TV series, I was never that big a fan of her in the movies, to be honest, but I just think
sacrilege.
I just think if, like, mainly the thing I like about Charlie Cox is that he spends a lot of time debating whether or not he should kill the Kingpin and eventually decides not to. And I have a lot of time for any sort of hero who will consider mortality with, you know, some kind of genuine consideration, like genuine thought.
Especially when you compare him to the Affleck version.
Pretty much every other hero we talk about is just straight up murdering people. And I think if you're going to be a hero, even Iron Man, you've got to value life in some way. And I think Charlie Cox's Daredevil has that debate with himself to an enjoyable extent.
Spider-Man and Superman do as well.
Spider-Man doesn't. Superman, not in this film. But,
and it has to. It bears mentioning, James, two of your nominations for this category were Meiji Kusanagi from Ghost in the Shell.
Oh yeah.
Dave Mazowski from Kick-Ass, who didn't ultimately make it into the list.
Yeah, I'm not saying that's the sole criteria, but I think that's, you know, I'm not comfortable with the level of murdering that happens in most superhero films, and I'm happy to see at least one hero who got to the point of thinking, should I just straight up murder this guy? No, probably not, because that's not very nice.
He does like his torture, though, right?
Yeah. I'm not saying he's perfect.
I tried to make the case for Michael B. Jordan's Steve from Chronicle, but he was sadly nowhere near this list. he's a pretty flawless hero for while he's around. Unfortunately, he's not around for very long.
Yeah.
No Fantastic Four actors made this list, and it had four of them to choose from. Mm-hmm. So that's an indictment. I'm finding it a struggle to pick a clear winner here. So, James, you're making the case for Daredevil.
Yeah.
Seb, where would your vote lie?
I mean, I'm kind of torn three ways between, like, I perpetually struggle with, like, on any given day, you could ask me who the best superhero is out of Superman and Spider-Man, and I would give you a different answer depending on what day of the week it was. So if we're just going purely on who is the best superhero, and, you know, in the two films that we've covered, they are really good representations of the character that I love from the comics. Mm. So I can't really choose between them two, and that's almost why I'm leaning towards Peggy, just to avoid me having to choose between Superman and Spider-Man.
Are we sleeping on Iron Man here? He's pretty,
but he's not.
I was going to say, he's not that much of a hero. He's a kind of, he's like a rock star.
If we're talking about Avengers, you know, he's the hero of Avengers, but in his own first two films, he's not really as much.
And he did create Ultron this year, didn't he?
I did create Ultron this year.
Yeah, you can't give the award to the guy who created Ultron. Right. Okay. Fair enough.
Yeah. This is like in the year that Civil War the comic came out. The readers of Wizard magazine voted Iron Man as villain of the year.
I don't think I can go with James on Daredevil. I like Charlie Cox, but I think its villain is just so much more. So much more of an appeal of that show than its heroes.
You're the reason that, like, property magnates take over New York, because you're like, oh, but look, they had a difficult childhood.
Right, tell you what, Joe, tell me your pick, and then I will tell you which of you and James I'll
agree. I don't know. I want
if I do a vote of my own, we're going to have a three.
Well, I want to know what James is. So you wouldn't be voting for Daredevil, would you, Seb?
I would consider it, depending on who your choice was.
I was just wondering if James had a backup choice.
Backup choice? No.
Spider-Man, Superman, Peggy Carter.
Is this just going to result in me and James just going, look, Spider-Man is the best?
I think it might.
But I feel like we haven't even seen the best of Tobey Maguire's Spider-Man yet.
Well, we haven't, but he is the best.
Spider-Man will be my second choice out of that list, definitely.
Have we seen the best of Christopher Reeve's Superman? He does save the world. You're right, sir.
Yeah, second time. World.
And he is...
Oh, no, I mean, actually, the first film is his best film as well. Because in the second film, he does some unheroic things. My vote is for Christopher Reeve Superman. Christopher Reeve Superman is pretty much, in that first film, is pretty much the most perfect representation of a superhero. So that's what I'm going with. So we're going to have a three-way tie.
Okay. I'm willing to go with Seb and go Superman. But I'm very conflicted about this category. I kind of want to give it to all of them and none of them.
You just want to give it to the Kingpin. That's what you want.
Yeah, that would be wonderful. Well, okay, so Superman is the hero that we deserve. He is the best hero for this year. I feel like we really struggled with that category. Hey, this is Joe from the future jumping in here to say that we've actually reached the halfway point of our end of year awards show. And so sadly, that's it for this week. Just to recap the winners of the awards we've had so far. J.K. Simmons for Spider-Man won Best Supporting Actor. Chloe Moretz for Kick-Ass won Best Supporting Actress. Superman is our Best Hero of the Year. Tony Stark and Pepper Potts are our Best Couple. Scott Pilgrim wins the award for Best Casting. And Ant-Man was named Best New Film. Now, we've got a lot more awards coming in the second half of the show. We pick up the pace considerably. We have categories for Best Song, Best Costume, Best Villain, Best Screenplay, Best Director, Best Actress, Best Actor, Worst Film, and Best Film to come. We're also going to be looking back at some of our favourite pitches from the year and naming a Best Pitch. Naming the Best Comic Recommendation of the Year and giving you some comics recommendations for comics that released in 2015. And we're going to cap it all off by inducting someone into the Cinematic Universe Hall of Fame. And it's probably going to be someone that you hear their name mentioned frequently throughout the podcast, who we have an opportunity to honour in some way there. So yeah, we'll be back next week with part two of this special, I guess in the first week of 2016. So have a good new year and we'll see you then.